And welcome to the Learn to Fly program. And today we have a really special guest who is going to teach us about how to work and make a ceremony for our community when people are shamanically inclined and when they're not shamanically inclined, because there's just so many ways that we can do it. And Sandra Ingerman is the master of ceremonies. In fact, she has a brand new book out called The Book of Ceremonies, Shamanic Wisdom for Invoking the Sacred into Everyday Life. She is the award-winning author of 12 books, including Soul Retrieval, Medicine for the Earth, Walking in Light, and her latest one, The Book of Ceremony. And she is a presenter of 8 audio program, and she's been writing the transmutation app. She has a transmutation app, but she's been writing the transmutation newsletter since, I believe she said, early 2000. And she's, for 35 years, she's been teaching other people how to be teachers and also for healing. And we have together, we have the Shaman's Cave. So we get to speak every week, but I'm really honored and thrilled that you're here teaching our small community university how to build a ceremony. And they're all here too. And I'm going to just let them know, if you have questions, just type them in your chat box and she'll be happy to answer some questions later on after she gives us a little bit of a presentation.
Yeah. So thank you, Renee. And hi, everybody. Wow, I'd love to learn how to fly. I should sign up for this course. So I started practicing shamanism back in 1980. And I was really nervous about performing any kind of ceremony, because I always thought there was a right and a wrong way to do ceremony. And at the time, I was living in the Bay Area, and I had a client who was known for her ceremonial work. And I said to her, let's do a trade. I'll work with you and you teach me how to do ceremony. And she said, there's no right way to do ceremony. Just do it. Just do it. And so it was like when I got that permission, I went ceremony crazy. I just started performing all these ceremonies in my house and really working with the power of intention, you know, which is so important. And then when I started teaching 5-day workshops back in 1990, I started to lead group ceremonies in my workshops. And then in 2004, I had an amazing opportunity where the School of Integrative Medicine at the University of Michigan invited me to do a research study to see the effects of my Medicine for the Earth work on people who had suffered a heart attack. We were looking at a population of people, you know, it's really common after a heart attack to go into a state of depression. And so we were gonna see if my work helped people who went into a big state of depression after a heart attack. And it was a big study. There were 3 groups. I'm only going to talk about mine. I'm not going to talk about the study. I don't want to take up time. But the reason I'm bringing this up is it was an incredible learning experience for me, because 97 to 98% of my group, and I had about 30 people in the group, were fundamentalist Christians, and they showed up to this 4-day workshop with their Bibles. I was leading shamanic ceremonies the whole 4 days. And so my God, I was so nervous when everybody's sitting in with their Bible, and every time I said anything, they opened up their Bible and started looking everything up to make sure that I wasn't asking them to do anything against their religion. And so the big teaching for me, because I led all the ceremonies that I actually lead in what I call my Medicine for the Earth workshops with this group. And you would not have known the difference that this wasn't a shamanic group. They drummed, they rattled, they chanted, they supported each other, they worked with the fire. We did amazing ceremonial work. And so the teaching for me, and why I'm sharing this with you, is that ceremonial work is so powerful to bring into communities, but you can actually bring ceremonial work into any community if you're not wedded. You know, some people are like, I'm not going to do a ceremony unless I can say certain words or phrases or talk about the helping spirits. And those are decisions that you have to make, because this is a work that is so powerful for people that why not broaden your perspective and go out into your communities and create some really beautiful ceremonies. So I'd like to talk about ceremonial work, how to bring it into your community, and how to bring it into a non-shamanic community too. And so ceremony, one of the reasons that ceremony is so powerful, it's not so much what we do in the ceremony. I sometimes feel that what we do in the ceremony is just to distract our egos, so that the magic that goes on beyond the ceremony can actually happen, because our ego has something to do. You know, we have to set the intention, we have to get our tools together, and, you know, so we have busy work for our ego while spirit is creating this whole magical event. And what happens in ceremony is we lift out of our humanness and we step into our divine nature, and we end up creating this incredible line of communication with the creative forces of the universe. And so it's like having a direct phone line once we step into spirit self and we get out of our ego. It's like we get this phone line connection to the power of the universe, and then we get agreement between the ordinary and non-ordinary realms to help us manifest our outcome. And so what are the important aspects to bring into a ceremony? Because ceremony is a way to create a state of centeredness, to make us feel stable during these crazy times that we live in. And it's wonderful to do ceremony on your own, but when you bring a group together, number one, there's shared responsibility, which is nice. And the support is unbelievable. I teach ceremonies in all my workshops, and people never had that kind of support in their life. They never had people drumming and yelling and screaming for their healing and their success. And it's such a powerful experience. And so I always tell people to have the courage to step out and do ceremonial work with your community. In shamanism, intention is everything. And so it's really important to come up with what's the intention of the ceremony. And, you know, you can do ceremonies for so many things, for releasing old beliefs and pains and hurts and wounds, to ask for blessings to come into your life, to bless a new baby coming into the world, to bless a marriage, to help with a divorce, to bless a house, to bless your land, your garden. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's endless what you can do with ceremonial work, but setting your intention, because intention creates action. And so once you set your intention, it's like the universe starts bringing together the energetic components that need to happen to to create an outcome, maybe not in your ego's time, but in your soul's time. And that's something that's really important. And so finding a place where you want to do your ceremony for your community is important. Do you want to work inside? Do you want to work outside? And I do both. And so I've had a lot of experience with both. One of the things about indoor ceremonies is it contains the energy a little bit. And so I know a lot of my groups always say, oh, I want to work outside. I want to work outside. And yeah, there's a power to doing ceremonial work in nature, but there's also a beauty. There's a power. There's a containment of the energy when you work inside. So that's something that you can think about. And whether you work inside or outside, I find outside, especially if you're doing drumming, the drumming can get quite chaotic, and you know, the sound doesn't really contain the energy, but yet you have nature surrounding you and dancing and singing with you. And, you know, that's something that we all love. And that gets missed when we work inside. So creating sacred space wherever you choose to do your ceremony is important. And so I ask for volunteers when I do ceremonies in community, for people to help to create sacred space. And what that means is energetically clearing the space. And so whether it's through sage or prayer or however you want to work, but making sure that the energy's been cleared. And what kind of special objects do you want to bring into the ceremony? So like if you're working inside or even if you're working outside, do you want flowers? Do you want candles? You know, what makes it seem more special? What kind of altar do you want to create that makes it seem special? And then welcoming the group into a ceremony is really important. And there are different ways that you can do this. And what I like to do in my ceremonies is I can come up with ways to welcome a group, but I find that if I ask people to help with this, that people bring in unique ways that I never would have thought of before. And so I have, you know, if we're doing a fire ceremony outside, to ask for our wishes to be manifested, or a fire ceremony to release pain. I have the group be welcomed before they come into the ceremony and cleansed. And so sometimes we sage the group. Sometimes we take earth and anoint people. Sometimes we use water to anoint people. Sometimes we rattle people into the ceremony. Sometimes we line the path with candles. In some of my workshops, people have built these amazing, beautiful arbors out of branches and put flowers in them. I love the creativity. So welcoming people, clearing them, and welcoming into the ceremony, I think is really important. And so if I'm working with people who are not shamanic and have a different belief system, I feel it's really important to make sure that you welcome people in a way that's not going to make them nervous or turn them away. So like with my group in Michigan, it was not an option for us to sage. It just wasn't. We actually checked it out with the group and we asked them and they went, no sage. But we welcomed them in with rattles and we welcomed them in with bells. You don't have to use sage. You know, when you get into this thing of the only way to clear, the only way to welcome is if I use incense or a particular way to work, you're limiting yourself because ceremony is around what's in your heart and what's your intention. It's not about whether you rattle to the directions in a particular way or you cleanse people with sage. That's not the point. It's what your intention and what are people comfortable with. The way with the group in Michigan, and I've done this with other groups that definitely would not embrace any kind of shamanic work, is I explain that drumming is a way to bring calmness into your body, and it produces endorphins that relieve stress. And so remember that in Michigan, I was working with a group that was nervous about having another heart attack. So they heard drumming has been scientifically proved to produce endorphins in your brain that relieve stress. My God, these people with drum and dance and rattle. We had drums and rattles for everybody. You would think that it was an indigenous culture. They drummed more than my regular shamanic groups, and you couldn't stop them. They danced, they sang. So I wouldn't be afraid to use drums and rattles with anybody. You can just say, it's a way of holding space. It's a way of producing endorphins that bring you more into a spiritual state of consciousness. It's a way that holds space for us to pray together. You know, you have to use your imagination of how to speak to everybody. And if you're doing a small ceremony in a community that you know, it's not that important, you know, to greet everybody. It's important to welcome everybody, as I just talked about, of welcoming into the circle by either smudging them or rattling or singing, you know, something that welcomes them into the space. But if I'm working with a group that I don't know beforehand, and for many years I was invited into groups to perform ceremonies and I didn't know anybody, I would walk up to each person and I would introduce myself and I would shake hands or hug them. And that started to melt some of the nervousness away. It wasn't like, you know, who's this woman? You know, you introduce yourself to people, you make them feel comfortable. And there's something about songs we know the power of singing. When you really sing, your heart opens up, it quiets your mind. And so opening with a song is a really powerful way to work. A song that you know, if you're working with a shamanic group, you know, there's all these circle songs, or you might want to sing more of a generic song depending on who the group is. Invocation of the spirits is really important in all ceremonial work because the spirits are supporting the work that we're doing. And so some people greet the directions. I actually don't greet the directions in my workshops and in my ceremonies, and it's because I'm a directionless person. I was born with no sense of direction, and so when I'm forced, because I think the group is expecting me to greet the east and the west and the north and the south and above and below, it's not always authentic for me. And being authentic, it's not having steps that you perform in a ceremony isn't the key. It's being authentic. And so the whole thing with directions gets a little crazy in the shamanic world, because if you look at different indigenous cultures, and I've actually spoken to a lot of tribal people about this, There isn't any kind of agreement about what the directions mean, because the directions were worked with based on the weather and based on, actually, as Renee, I'm sure, has shared with you, how the wind comes in. That's how tribal people work with the directions, is what direction does the wind come in? And so depending on where you live, the wind is going to come in from different places. And so different tribes, different cultures have different meanings for the directions because they have to do with the weather. And so if you want to work with the directions in your ceremonies, in your group ceremonies, then journey for yourself. Do some spiritual work for yourself so that you get an understanding. Because what a lot of people do in ceremonial work, especially when they bring it into a community, is they copy somebody else's ceremony that they saw. And then there's no heart in it. You're following a script, and spirit doesn't follow a script. Your heart is the opening for spirit to move through. So some people start a ceremony by invoking the greeting the different directions and honoring the different directions. For me, there are different spirits that are really important to me personally to greet when I do ceremonial work. So I start with the land, because in shamanism, the land is our greatest ally. And so the land where you're performing your ceremony is your major helping spirit. It's your major helping spirit when you do ceremonial work. And so I always start by greeting the land. I use my rattles, I use whistling. You know, we wait until everybody's welcomed into the circle, as I shared. And then I get up with my rattles and I start to whistle and I start to greet certain spirits, and I start with the land. And then I greet the helping ancestors of the land. And this was very important for me to learn. And I learned this through trial and error. I found that as I started to always greet the helping ancestors of the land, a lot of the problems that I had at ceremonies, especially around weather, all of a sudden things would change. So, you know, I was doing a fire ceremony in Tennessee during Hurricane Opal. And due to the hurricane, we were going to use this little tiny fireplace in a room where we were going to have to be like on Wall Street in New York. And right as I was getting ready to start the ceremony, the hurricane stopped. And we all took wood and we ran out to the big fire pit outside. And we did the ceremony, and the hurricane stayed away until the last person put their power object into the fire. The second I said the work is done for now, the hurricane came back and we all ran into the retreat center. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I had called in the helping ancestors of the land. And so they made sure that we could do the ceremony in a really good way. So I greet the land, I greet the helping ancestors of the land, I greet the hidden folk, the fairies, the Devic realms, because they're caretakers of the earth and they love ceremonial work, and they add just a huge element of excitement to any ceremony. And I honor the earth, air, water, fire, the sun, the stars, the moon, and all the beings that live in the earth, the water, and the air, you know, you can do a long invocation by, you know, talking about every animal that lives on in the ground and in the water and in the air. And I found for myself, I just honor the beings that live in those elements. And we honor our own helping spirits and honor our ancestors. And I always say, and different spiritual traditions have different ways that you do this, I apologize to any helping spirit I forgot to honor, because you always leave out somebody and you don't want to get paranoid about that. And so, greeting the spirits from your heart, in the way that you wish to. And if I'm working with a non-shamanic group, I don't get into talking about helping spirits or the hidden folk or the helping ancestors of the land. We just greet whatever beings we pray to. Whatever beings we pray to, we honor them and we ask them to join our circle to witness the beautiful work that's about to begin. And so, that's a way of honoring, and that's a way of starting a ceremony. And then the middle of the ceremony, it depends on how you want to work. I like to work with fire. I'm a real fire being. I just love working with fire, but it's actually becoming harder for me to work with fire these days because of the weather conditions in a lot of the places I teach at. And so there are different ways to work. There's a wonderful site called sciencebob.com, and they sell things for kids. And one of my students turned me on to, you can get from sciencebob.com dissolving paper. And it's completely safe, it's environmentally correct. And you can have people write stories or write words or symbols or pictures. And you heat up water and you put it in the water and it completely dissolves the water. And so you can have everybody going around the circle and sharing a story of either something they want to release or something they want blessed. And you can put the paper into the water. And so you can find different elements that you want to work with. You can bring incense in if it's appropriate. Each person can thank the person before them or after. But you want to have people feel like they're being supported. And so if we're drumming and rattling, and it doesn't matter if I'm in a shamanic group or a non-shamanic group, we chair with our drums and rattles after somebody does a big piece of work, because that's really important. And then once everybody's finished, and I ask people to work one by one, if you have too many people working together, it's hard for the group to be able to support and hold space. So I have people working one by one. And then when the ceremony is done, I usually do some dancing and singing with the group. And then we sing some songs and then we thank the spirits. And I always ask, unless it's an emergency, that nobody leave the ceremony until they actually hear the words, "Our work is done for now." And so when there was the fire in Santa Rosa, some of my students performed a ceremony. I'm just giving you some ideas of how you can work. Some of my group performed a ceremony where they had people from their neighborhood come together and everybody sat around in a circle. There were the fire men there. And Stuart and Anne brought some food and special objects, and they made an altar. And they let everybody go around the circle and share how they felt and what was happening for them. They expressed how they felt to the fire. And then Student Anne actually led a little guided meditation where people could talk to the fire and the fire talked back to them. And people got a lot of peace from being able to speak to the fire. It was really amazing. And even the fire, you know, men and women that were there, you know, it was a very powerful event. And then everybody got these little crystal hearts or something to take home with them to remember the ceremony. And so that's a way that you can work after some kind of catastrophe happens. You can bring people together, have them share and do some kind of healing ritual, where they ask for blessings and for good health after this event has happened. And, you know, there's lots of different ways to do this. If you have access to the ocean or a beach, going down and having people draw mandalas in the sand and having the ocean come and wash all the symbols into the water, it's a very powerful experience about talking about impermanence. Another ceremony that I love to do in community, and this is, I think, such a beautiful way to work with a shamanic or non-shamanic community, is to work with prayer trees. And I had originally heard about prayer trees from people in Siberia, because in Central Asia, prayer trees are used all the time. And the trees are filled with ribbons, and it's amazing how, you know, the branches almost touch the ground because there's so many, there's so much fabric on them from so many people tying prayers on them. And as I started teaching about prayer trees, I learned from my students that prayer and wishing trees and blessing trees actually have been worked with all over the world, not just in Siberia. All my students were talking about, we have them in Italy, we have them in Turkey, we have them in South America. And prayer trees are a great way to work, where you do an invocation, you ask a tree if it wants to work with you, because it needs to be a partner, you just don't want to pick a tree. And then you want to do invocations to the tree. You want to leave it offerings. And when you leave offerings on the land, please remember that animals eat the offerings. So be careful what kinds of food you leave as offerings if you're going to work with a prayer tree or if you're going to leave offerings on the land. And then you can have yarn or you can have strips of ribbon. After you've done, you know, invocations to the tree and you call in the helping spirits in the way that feels right to you. And this is a ceremony that's so perfect for a non-shamanic community, where everybody just ties a wish onto a tree, a branch of the tree. You want to leave the fabric, you don't want to tie it on tight or the yarn on tight, because the branches keep growing. So, you know, I instruct people to tie everything on really loose. And prayer blessing trees are wonderful ways. You can, some of my students have created prayer trees in Central Park and put instructions of here's ribbon and put a prayer on for yourself or for our community. And you can do this in your local community or you can do it for your shamanic community. It's really wonderful. And that prayer tree becomes such a being that that binds and bonds the community together, because everybody knows there's this communal tree that you can go to talk to put some prayers and wishes on for healing or for blessings. And so these are really wonderful ways that you can work. And the last thing I want to say before I open up to some questions is outcome. Explaining to people in your community about outcome is really important, because we have, as human beings, as egoic beings, we have such a limited perception about time. And we don't understand, like in indigenous cultures, that time really has no meaning in this ordinary reality. And that there's just different phases of summer, winter, spring, and fall. And when our wishes and our prayers are going to come into manifest form. And so we just tell people it's really important to keep up the work and to know that the universe is going to bring us the best for our higher self, and that our soul is going to manifest the best for our higher self in the right time and in the right way. And so the point is to do the ceremonial work, to bring it into your communities, and not get so focused on the timing of the outcome. So that's kind of a big picture of bringing ceremony into communities. Obviously, I can go on for hours because there are so many ceremonies that you can do. But those are important elements of intention, creating space, welcoming people, doing some kind of invocation, depending on the group, whether you do a shamanic invocation or just some kind of prayer, and some kind of closing. You know, these are really the important elements that go into a ceremony. So if anybody has a question, I'm really happy to answer it or try.
You've got everyone excited. So there were some questions, and, you know, I can ask them. One of the things, and this is, I think, would fit, like, so the people who are here also just did my 5-week Wind Mastery program. And one of the problems that I guess that I'm having, and probably other people are having too, is that, you know, with everybody doing the work at their own time, you know, like, I didn't feel like it was okay to close the class at the end of the 5 modules, because I knew that there were still people in the middle of their mandalas.
Right.
So what do you do for a closing when, you know, you've got an online program and you want to do some kind of a ceremonial closing? Do you hold it off a week, or do you just do it and think that the timing's going to hit when the timing's right?
Well, what I explain to people in my online programs, because I have people who signed up for an online program 2 years ago and they still hadn't finished the program yet. And so I can't wait for everybody to finish. You know, there's no way. So I do a closing at the end. But what I explain to everybody in my groups is that we're working outside of time. So whenever they come into the ceremony, they just add an exponential power to the ceremony, because it's still working outside of time. So even though we've closed the circle, we're done, you know, our course is over, the work is still actually going on in the non-ordinary worlds. And so I say, whenever you step into the ceremonial work, you've just added more power to the work that's going on over time.
Mm, that's great, because, you know, it's really powerful. One person's been taking the ancestor course, and she wanted to know if you have a ceremony around the soul stealing and the ancestral work that you prefer.
Yeah. Well, for soul stealing, how I work with it is, and, you know, I mostly work with this with clients and in my 5-day soul retrieval training workshops. And so what I do is I have people pair up. And if I'm working with a client, I'm their partner. And what we do is we design a ceremony, and I'll ask my client, I'll work with it as if it's my client, and then you can see how you can do this out in the world. I ask my client if they have a favorite element, because I'm not going to do a fire ceremony for somebody who's afraid of fire. And so what's your favorite element? And so if they say air is their favorite element, we'll get maybe a sage shell and put some sage in. And I'll ask my client, would you like me to stand right next to you? Would you like me to stand on the top of the hill while you do this work, holding space and rattling for you? So I let my client know that I am your assistant. I'm not pushing myself on you, because people don't want you in their space unless you're invited into their space. So how can I support you? Do you want me standing right next to you drumming, or do you want me all the way away holding space? And so my client might send the soul back to the universe that they've stolen, you know, through sage or through drumming and singing. Or some people build a little ship out of natural materials and put it in water so the soul drifts away to the power of the universe, or sends it back on the smoke of a fire. But what I instruct is you don't want to send the soul back to the person who you've stolen it from, because you don't know if they're ready for it. And I don't want to go into it, but I had some bad experiences that let me know that not everybody's ready for their soul to come back without knowing what's going on. And so my instruction for sending a soul, letting go of a soul that you have stolen, is to send it back to the universe, who knows the right timing of when that person is ready to receive it. Now, if you think your soul has been stolen, then you have to go to a shamanic practitioner to have them perform a soul retrieval for you to get that back. But it's really interesting when I work with clients, and I teach this in my soul retrieval trainings, I'll have clients come to me and they'll start screaming, "My lover stole my soul." And I go, "Okay, let me journey on it. Let me see what we're going to do." And I journey, and my power animal goes, "No, they stole their lover's soul. It was the reverse. It just feels the same." And so you want to check in with the spirits, who did what, not without without any guilt, because this is a behavior that's been passed down, you know, for thousands of years. We're just looking at becoming more conscious beings. So using an element to send the soul back to the power of the universe is basically what you want to do in a soul releasing ceremony.
That sounds powerful. I have to listen to that one still. I haven't. The one you sent me a few weeks ago reminds me. This is one of my assistants in my Wind Mastery program. She wants to know, she says she's been getting guided to lead silent ceremonies. Mm. So do you have any wisdom on the silent ceremonies?
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to move more into silent work, because what's happening for me in my own evolution is I'm starting to feel the power of emanating and transmissions from the heart, instead of working so much from the rational mind. And so I think it's really powerful to do a silent ceremony in the same way, you know, where you just ask people to invoke silently those beings that they would like to have at the ceremony, and everybody works in silence. I think that's a powerful way to work. I was once leading a fire ceremony at a workshop where we had unbelievable downpour. It was unbelievable downpour. And we were able to start the fire, which was a miracle in itself. But everybody had to wear a rain poncho, so nobody could see who was going up to the fire. Everybody was anonymous. And there was such a power in that. There was such a power where nobody could see who was doing their work. And so, you know, not being able to see, not being a personality during a ceremony, or everybody working in silence, emanating, supporting through that heart space. I think that's a beautiful way to work.
That's great. I don't know if anyone else has any questions. There's a question that I have is, so when we were at this summer, when we were at Omega, you know, this was me wanting everybody to plan the ceremony and execute the ceremony. And, you know, we kind of tripped up a little bit, and then other people got involved and they could criticize our ceremony. And so how, when you, I know you have your shamans teachers. So how do you do that when there's like the group planning the ceremony? Is there like one person in charge or one authority, you know, like what do you, how does that work out in your world?
Well, that definitely gets tricky. First of all, I only have a few people, you know, who, you know, design the ceremony. And I rarely have people fighting, but I do. And if that happens, then I get involved and I'm the authority, you know. And I just let people know how to work. But what I think what's really important is to understand that there's a power in all the tripping up that happens at a ceremony, because the coyote energy is a powerful energy to have come in. So all the things that go wrong during a ceremony can be absolutely perfect. I had in the most amazing ceremony, I had a person throw up right all over the floor, right in the middle of the ceremony. And these are things that happen. And from a shamanic point of view, they're absolutely perfect. And I don't allow people to share after a ceremony how they felt about it. I do not allow it, because in the West, you have people who, it was such a powerful ceremony for them. And then you have people going, oh, I didn't like the drumming. I didn't like the rattling. I didn't like being touched when I was being welcomed. All of that breaks the magic. Whatever happens in a ceremony is part of the magic. It's part of the magic. And so from an indigenous point of view, what is said after a ceremony is, wasn't that beautiful? Doesn't matter what went wrong. Doesn't matter what went wrong. Wasn't it beautiful? And I had to learn that in teaching workshops, that two people can destroy an entire ceremony for a group because they get judgmental. So the only thing people are able to say after a ceremony is how beautiful it was or how they felt supported, but not about the parts of the ceremony. I don't allow that kind of sharing in my workshops.
That's so good to know, because we had the queen of Heyoka medicine at our ceremony who create these ideas and then walk out. And like, we were like left holding. It was fun. It was a learning experience for me about, okay, you know, you have to be the ultimate authority too at this point. There's one more question about food and ceremonies. Mm-hmm. You know, do you like food during the ceremony, food after the ceremony, or anything?
Well, yeah, food during a ceremony, I think, is really distracting, because focus, concentration and focus are really important parts of a ceremony. And so I try to, as much as possible, to keep out distractions. It's not always possible. Like you said, the Heyoka energy comes in and there are distractions that happen. And food is a wonderful way to celebrate after the ceremony. And so for a community ceremony, it either you could bring the food or you could, you know, have a potluck. And that's a beautiful way to end a ceremony.
Absolutely. Being that I studied for the Lakota for 10 years, you know, food was so much a part of the, you know, the giveaway afterwards. And even after I did 3 days on the mountain, you know, I had to host the ceremony, thanking everyone for holding space for me. So it was like another 30 people in my yard, you know, that was probably because I'm a chef, I guess. And this question, I'm not quite exactly sure, anything post-ceremony, days or week later, or is the ceremony in itself complete when it's done?
Well, what you're trying to do at the end of the ceremony is bring a closure for the group. Closure is really important for people. If people don't have any closure, it's hard for them to ground afterwards, you know, because they're still in that non-ordinary space. So singing, saying the work is done for now, eating together afterwards is a way to bring closure. But what's important to understand is when you do a ceremony, you created like a portal into the unseen worlds where the work is still happening in the unseen worlds. But it's important for people, for them to feel centered and grounded after the ceremony to bring it to a close. But that doesn't mean the ceremony's over. It just means the work is done for now.
Which reminds me, I'm going to close up that Wind Mastery program this week with this. So, well, yeah. I just want to so thank you for taking, you know, time. I know it's your favorite subject, but, you know, I just really appreciate that you share this with us.
I don't know if I answered completely what somebody was asking.
Yeah, no, I think she wants to know. Not sharing right after, but maybe later, not criticizing, but sharing important experiences.
Yeah.
Which you and I covered on the call the other day is that to hold that information sacred long enough for it to take root before you go out sharing it. And I know that you believe that as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like if people are doing a releasing ceremony to release their greatest wound and they tell the group before the ceremony what they're releasing, it's like you took the pot off that was cooking and you released all the steam and all the flavor and all the power. It wasn't cooked yet. And so you want to finish the cooking before you share.
I just love you. I just think you're awesome. Everyone says thank you really very much for being here with us and for helping our Wind Clan grow, because the people who are here are really, you know, the people who are helping birth this work into the world. And so I'm really glad that we all got this intimate moment with you.
Yeah, and thanks everybody for the wonderful work that you're doing out there. That's great.
Well, thank you, Sandra. And
yeah.
Let me see. There we go.